Anarchopreneur, episode number 36, 8 marketing secrets that can make you a more effective activist. All right, here we go.
Government is inefficient and should be dissolved.
What government should actually do is just leave people alone to buy and sell freely among themselves. If they just leave self-interested traders to compete with one another, markets are guided to positive outcomes as if by an invisible hand.
It's free markets that are moral because you only succeed if you meet the needs and wants of other people.
One of the hard things for people to understand is that the more you try to control an economy, the more quickly it falls apart.
Capitalism, God's way of determining who is smart and who is poor.
All right, Free Market Squad and the place to be. Welcome back to another exciting episode of Anarchopreneur, the Nathan Fraser Show. We are broadcast on the Truth Frequency Radio Network and UCY.TV every single Sunday night. Thank you for joining us tonight. I do appreciate it. We're also picked up and rebroadcast over at LRN.FM. A huge thank you to everybody over there, everybody in general that helps pick up the show and put out this propaganda. I really do appreciate it. If you want more of this type of unprogramming, you can go over to NathanFraserShow.com. That is the new official website of this here podcast, NathanFraserShow.com. I am, of course, your host with the Hero Complex, Nathan Fraser. And you, more importantly, you are the Free Market Squad. What is going on, Free Market Squad? So I've got a lot to cover tonight, and I'm just going to jump right into it. This is this week's Live Free FM Focus on Freedom, and I was going to talk about discrimination and racism, which is a huge talking point right now in pretty much all venues of the media. Including the alternative media, but I'm not going to talk about that. In fact, I've got notes on what I wanted to cover, and I'm going to cover this next week. So if you really want to be infuriated at my opinions, make sure you tune in to next episode of Anarchopreneur. But this week, actually, after I had all of the show notes ready to do this show, last night I was going for a walk, and I'm listening to this book. I have an Audible account, and so I listen to a lot of books. And I was listening to this book called The Third Circle Theory. And it's actually a really decent book, but one of the things that I guess the way I was reading into it or listening into it, as the case may be, the author accidentally argued against democracy. And I don't think he intentionally did this. I don't even think he realized that he was doing this. But he made a couple of points in the book and really made a strong case against democracy and government in general. And I don't think it was intentional, but it happened nonetheless. And I want to cover why he made such an elegant case for getting rid of coercive government without even realizing that he was making that argument. So I'm going to talk about that tonight instead of what I was originally going to talk about, and I'll just jump into it. So like I said, I'm reading or listening, I guess is the more honest term, to this book called Third Circle Theory. And in it, the author talks about the three circles of awareness, or the three circles of thinking, three different levels of thinking, three different levels of self-realization, basically. And he talks about how at these different levels, people think and see things and see the world in different ways. And he talks about how the first level is where most people spend their entire life. The first circle in his three circle theory is where most people spend their entire life. They spend, I think he says, according to him, 80% of people spend their entire life in the first circle of his three circle theories. And that first circle consists of being very self-centered, being like when you're a child and you're first born into the world and the whole world kind of revolves around you. He talks about how most people go their entire lives that way with that level of thinking. Most people don't really have, they don't set goals. They're not very ambitious. They're content with falling into line. They're happy with their meager accomplishments in life. And this isn't to be like demeaning or talk down. Sometimes I envy those people. Sometimes I'm like the guy in the Matrix that's like, why, oh, why didn't I take the blue pill? But that's kind of what he's talking about. Most people live their entire lives in blue pill mode. And those people are rarely able to see outside of themselves. They don't spend very much time reflecting. They don't spend very much time in self-examination, and they don't spend very much time trying to see things from other people's points of view. And I'm not really going to get into the other two circles in the three circle or the third circle theory book. I do recommend reading the book, though. I will say that there's a lot in the book where he talks about the second circle, which is where I would say most business people are at. And I would say probably an overwhelming majority of the quote unquote truth movement exists within the second circle of the three circles that he talks about. And again, no condemnation. I probably also exist very much so in the second circle, which is not the ideal place to be according to the book, but I'm comfortable saying that that's kind of where I'm at. That's kind of where I see most people in business at. And it's kind of where I see an overwhelming majority of the truth movement at as well. But back to group one, the first circle. Most people in the first circle can only see things from their point of view. It's almost impossible for them to step outside of their way of looking at the world and be empathetic to the views of other people. And slightly more intelligent people, in my opinion and in the opinion of the author of this book, slightly more intelligent people can remove themselves from themselves. That's a really bad sentence structure. And look at situations from other points of view. And once you're able to do that, my experience has been once you're able to take yourself out of your own personal vested interest in a situation and look at it from other people's point of view, you're more likely to start questioning your own points of view. Once you're able to actually listen to other people, once you're able to actually understand where other people are coming from, you're less likely to dig your heels in the ground and be very stubborn in your way of thinking. And the author gets into that in this book and talks about how the more intelligent you are, the more likely you are to question your previously held beliefs. And one thing that I've kind of noticed studying some of the most intelligent people throughout history and studying like the movers and shakers of the world today, the more intelligent you are, the more you start to realize that you know very, very little about the world in general. The people that seem to or appear to or think that they know it all are usually the people that know the least. And the people that are willing to admit to themselves that they know very little are usually the people that know a lot more than the average person does. And so once you get to that point, once you get to the point where you realize that you don't know very much at all, your lust to control other people, your lust to force your views on other people starts to like subside. Is that the right word? It starts to kind of wane. You start realizing, hey, I thought I knew everything when I was 16. Now that I'm 28, I don't really feel like I know everything. And then you're 35 and you're like, I thought I knew everything when I was 30 or 28. Now that I'm 35, I'm realizing I didn't really know very much at all when I was 28. And once you get to that point, you start realizing, well, if I've been wrong before, what am I wrong about now? And if I'm wrong about things now, do I really want to force those wrong ideas onto other people? And typically, the more intelligent you are, the more likely you are to say to yourself, no, I don't want to force my views onto other people. You start to realize that, yeah, these things that I know, the way that I see the world, these things might work for me, but they might not work for other people. And they might not even be the best thing for me. It's just the best thing that I've been able to come up with so far. So why would I want to force what I feel like is the best thing that I've been able to come up so far for myself as a way of living? Why would I want to force that on other people? And voting becomes less appealing in general because it flies in the face of that understanding. It flies in the face of that worldview. On the other hand, though, most voters out there still operate in, and most people in general, but most people in general also make up most voters. Most voters out there still see things in level one or circle one level of understanding. They still are only able to see things that their way. They're not able to take in other people's points of view and logically weigh them against their own points of view. And this is why you see people get so passionately heated up in political arguments, where both sides make good and valid points and both sides hold just preposterous positions. And both sides can point the finger at how ludicrous the other side is, but neither side can look in the mirror and realize that they look just as silly to anybody outside of the argument, anybody that's not on their side or the other side. And one other thing that people that are in this mindset of thinking often share, both on the right side and the left side of the political aisle, is the idea that they're so correct in the way that they see the world and the way that they see political issues and the way that they see social and economic issues that they have the right to force their correct version on anybody who disagrees with them, and that it's okay to use violence if necessary to force those ideals on the people around them. And that's basically what it is. That's basically what voting is saying, I'm so just steadfast in my belief that this is the way that you should live your life, or you should spend your money, or you should spend your time, or you should do this with your property. I'm so steadfast that my way of seeing things is the right way and your way of seeing things is the wrong way, that we're going to have this contest of who can get more people on their side, and whoever has less people on their side is going to now be subject to violence in order to force you into going along with the side that happens to have more people. So it's not about respecting other people's point of view. It's not about respecting other people's autonomy and self-ownership. It's about, I'm right, you're wrong, and I'm okay with using violence, kidnapping, shooting you if necessary, or hiring agents of the state to kidnap and shoot you if necessary. I'm okay with using violence to force you into seeing things my way. And like I said, this mindset appeals to people that are on the right and appeals to people that are on the left, but it really only appeals to people of super low intelligence. People that are in level one or circle one of the three circle theory. It's not really an idea that appeals to highly intelligent people. Like I said, we see things once we get to a higher level of intelligence, we start to question other things that we believed before. We start to say, okay, maybe I don't know everything. Maybe my ideas aren't so perfect that they justify being violently forced upon other people. And so using force to shove your ideas down the throats of other people becomes less appealing. But the problem is the entire core belief upon which government exists is based upon the idea that it's okay to force your morality, your ideas, your way of seeing things on people who disagree with you, as long as you can outnumber those people. And I guess not government in general, democracy. That's kind of what democracy is. But government in general is just whether it's majority opinion or it's one guy sitting upon high, the idea that some people have the right to force their bad ideas on other people is where government comes from. And so when it comes to democracy, intelligent people tend to withdraw from that type of system. Intelligent people tend to be repulsed by the idea of forcing their ideas upon other people. And low-level thinkers are drawn like a magnet to that type of system. So when you have a society that's arranged around forcing ideas upon each other, not respecting the marketplace of ideas, but instead forcing ideas upon each other, when you have a system that's based upon that lower level intelligence and that lower level way of problem solving, that society, the power structure within that society is going to naturally be held by low thinking individuals. And that type of society is not going to be able to prosper as far as it could otherwise. The most intelligent in that society are going to withdraw from the seat and the rings of power, and the least intelligent are going to be drawn towards the reins of power. And so any form of democracy, any form of democracy is basically like the idea that a mass of low-level thinking voters can somehow produce better outcomes than a single low-level thinking dictator. And to me, that's just kind of silly. But the fact of the matter is that the point of this entire rant is any kind of system that's based around coercive enforcement of ideas on people who disagree with those ideas, any kind of system that's based off of the legitimacy or the perceived legitimacy of forcing people to go along with things that they don't agree with, any kind of system like that is going to be ran by people who think that that's okay. And the only people who really think that that's okay are the people that exist in the very lowest level of self-awareness. And so people who exist in a higher level of self-awareness will have less influence in that type of a society. And that type of a society will be ran by a majority of people who are trapped in the lowest level of thinking, the lowest level of self-awareness. And so any kind of society where government, even democracy, even a republic, any kind of society where government is legitimized is always going to fall far shorter as far as accomplishments, as far as what the society is able to accomplish as a whole. It's going to fall short compared to its true potential, because when you structure your society around force and the idea that it's okay to force ideas on people who disagree, that attracts the lowest level type of people and it repulses the highest level type of people. And that's why you see great advancements in free market areas and you see not very much advancement, and in fact, incredible levels of regression when it comes to the public sector. And that's why you also see the free market being led by these amazing innovators and forward thinkers, and you see the political arena being led by people like Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump. Just my thoughts on the situation. Again, that book, I highly recommend it. I'm not all the way through it yet, but it's called The Third Circle Theory. And I think everybody listening to this would probably get some incredible value out of it. So that was this week's Live Free FM Focus on Freedom. Now we're going to change direction a little bit and head into Nathan Fraser land. So what's going on in Nathan Fraser land? This week, I'm not going to really be talking about too much of what's going on in my business or my personal life. I'm going to be talking about a growing number of disturbing emails that I'm getting. I'm just never happy with my fans. okay, so when I used to do a lot of the legal stuff, I got frustrated by the people that reached out to me. And now that I'm doing more, covering more marketing and personal development type stuff, I'm not very much, I still get emails that are a little bit frustrating to me. I'll just put it that way. I've been getting a lot of emails lately from people, both emails and Facebook messages, from people asking me questions like, I need to make a bunch of money really quick. I just lost my job and, I got to figure something out, or, I've got this project coming up and I need a bunch of money to fund it. And how do I do that? And the repeated theme is, I want to make some money really fast. How do I do it? And why that's so frustrating to me is because that's not what I teach. That's not what I believe. And that's not what I'm all about. I'm not a get rich quick teacher. I'm not a, change this one thing in your life and everything will be better type of teacher. So I'm going to take a couple of minutes to clarify my position on some things that maybe I should have done before. Maybe I have done before, but doesn't seem to have stuck with a certain percentage of my listening audience. So I want to make this clear. I've worked very, very hard for everything that I've been able to do. I've made a lot of sacrifices. Some sacrifices, I question whether they were even worth it to get where I'm at right now in life. And I'm not like uber successful. I'm not a millionaire. I'm not somebody who has been able to quit everything and go live off of a beach and have that lifestyle entrepreneurial dream. That's not where I'm at, but I'm definitely, I do better than a lot of people do. As far as financially goes, but, I've had to work very, very hard to get to the point where I'm at right now. It's not been a get rich quick scheme that has put me in the position that I'm at. I do have a couple of different streams of passive income, so I'm not like 100% reliant on a 9-to-5 job, but to be completely honest with you, those streams, quote unquote, of passive income, sometimes they're more like trickles. Sometimes they produce a decent amount of money, but sometimes they don't produce very much at all. And if I wanted to have them, well, first of all, they took a lot of work to create. And if I really wanted to bring them to, if I wanted to nurture them and bring them to complete fruition, they'd take a lot more work going forward to bring them to their full potential. So it's not like I just created something, put it on the internet, and money just started magically flowing into my pockets. And that's not what I try to teach people, but that's what people keep asking me for. Now, if I was just a greedy biz op marketing type person, I guess I could come up with a course that promised to fulfill that that desire. But that's not, again, that's not what I'm about. So I can't do that. And another thing is I'm not really even interested in helping people looking for quick fixes. I don't believe in quick fixes to solving problems. And to be honest, I don't even really want to have people like that, people that are drawn to that mentality. I don't even want to have people like that in my life, let alone do business with people like that. I want to help driven people. I want to help people that believe in the value that they provide to others. I'm good at persuading people. That's probably why I'm attracted to copywriting, but I'm only good at persuading people when I'm actually passionate about what I'm trying to persuade people on. And when I honestly believe it, and when I honestly believe that what I'm trying to persuade you into is going to be better and beneficial for your life. I'm not like, I've heard some marketers and some copywriters, I call them hitman marketers or hitman copywriters, people that are able to turn off their conscience and just get the job done, turn off their personal feelings and emotions about it and just get the job done. I'm not a hitman marketer. I can't do that. I have to be sincere about the things that I'm pushing people to do. Otherwise, I'm not able to to push people to do it. And so, like I said, I don't believe in getting rich quick. And I don't believe in getting value at the expense of other people. I believe in giving value. I believe in creating value for the people around you and then receiving something back. And that's not something that comes overnight. That's not something that you can lose your job this week and next week have accomplished the ability to do. I believe in long, hard work of building things of actual value in order to receive value back from the people that you helped. So if you're somebody who's looking for get-rich-quick methods, or if you're somebody who's looking for instant gratification tactics, look elsewhere. That's not what I'm about. That's not what this show is about. This show is about freedom. The show is about personal freedom, about professional freedom. It's about being your own boss, but freedom isn't easy. Freedom is something that takes a lot of hard work, both politically, personally, and professionally. And that's what I'm about. I'm about the hard work, and I'm not looking for people to follow my work that are looking for get-rich-quick schemes or easy solutions. That's not what this show's about. So I've been getting a lot of emails from people asking for that, and please stop, because that's not what I'm going to be about. That's not what I'm ever going to be about. That's not what this show is about. All right, we're coming up on the break. This is The Nathan Frazier Show. We'll be right back on the other side. We're going to be talking about 8 secrets of marketing that can help you become a better activist. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
Free people.
You're a busy podcaster, not a web designer, but you know, without a professional website to send your guests and listeners to, your podcast will not get the attention it deserves. Having a great website is crucial to the success of your podcast, but it can also be a major headache, not to mention a drain on your wallet. You need a service that's easy to use, gives you a great website, and hosts your podcast files all in one place. You need BlastPod from Podcast Blastoff. Far from just another WordPress platform, BlastPod was built from the ground up by podcasters for podcasters. BlastPod is your all-in-one podcasting solution that gives you the ability to podcast like the pros. Sign up now and get access to your BlastPod website today. Putting the power of podcasting into the hands of the people. PodcastBlastoff.com.
Let me ask you something. Haven't you ever been tempted to just break the rules and finally
get back at my big faceless corporate bosses for making me feel so small and insignificant?
Look at this Marge, $58 and all of it profit. I'm the smartest businessman in the world.
Government can print money, but it's the entrepreneurs who really make the money.
Why don't you guys just make your cars cleaner and nicer and try to be better to your customers so that you can compete with Handycar's popularity in the marketplace?
Shut up and take my money.
And we're back, Free Market Squad. This is Anarchopreneur, The Nathan Frazier Show. I am your host, Nathan Frazier. We're broadcasting on the Truth Frequency Radio Network, UCY.TV, picked up and rebroadcast over at LRN.FM. A huge thank you to everybody that picks up the show. A huge thank you to you for tuning in to this 1 hour of unprogramming every single week. I do appreciate that you give me an hour of your time. Before we jump into this next segment, though, I do have to say a thank you to a couple listeners of the show. First of all, Ole, much love and thank you for your donation. And also to Shane, who sent a donation last week as well. I don't have a donation button on the website. I don't have a Patreon account. I don't make it easy for people to donate to the show because I don't do this show for donations. For a while there, I did have that stuff available. I did monetize this podcast in that fashion. I don't do that anymore. I don't make it easy to donate to the show nowadays because I was getting a lot of donations from people, and they would tell me what they liked about the show, and I would alter the direction that I was going to take with the show based off of whether or not I thought they would keep donating. Kind of like sponsors, when you have sponsors for your podcast or your radio show or whatever it is, sometimes you'll self-censor. Sometimes you'll say, oh, I was going to talk about this, but I might piss off this sponsor, so I'm not going to talk about that. Or it might go against the narrative that this sponsor wants to be putting out there, so I'm not going to talk about that. I found myself doing that with donators and supporters. Sometimes I'd want to do a topic, and then I'd ask myself, well, how will the people that donate to my show feel? Or will they be offended? Or will they stop donating if they hear me say this? And I was not comfortable with that. It wasn't that I ever let that affect the way that I did the show, but it was something that I thought about. It was something that I gave energy to, and it was something that I wasn't comfortable giving energy to. It was something that I wasn't comfortable with the fact that I let it even play the minute role in my decision-making process that it was. So I cut that. I took away the donate buttons. I decided not to do a Patreon account, which Patreon seems to be like a pretty popular way to monetize podcasts now. I'm not talking crap about people that do that. I'm not talking crap. I'm not being like, oh, I'm better than you because I don't have a donate button and blah, 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 and you guys all suck. It just didn't work for me. It wasn't conducive with the type of content that I wanted to put out. So I took away the PayPal button. I decided not to do a Patreon account. And that was just a personal decision. Olay figured out or had access to my PayPal and was able to make a donation / payment. Also, Shane did the same thing. So much love and thank you both of you for supporting the show. But if you're listening and you're like, well, how do I make a donation? You can't. And maybe in the future, I'll present some sort of way if you feel that you find value in this show. Maybe I'll present some sort of way for you to reciprocate that value. But as far as right now goes, the most valuable thing that you can do is share the show. Or go to iTunes or Stitcher or however you listen to the show and subscribe. And make sure that you get this creamy goodness in your ear holes every single week. That's probably the best thing that you can do for me is subscribe to the show and rate and review and share it with people. And that, to me, that's much more important than sending me money. So thank you to Olay. Thank you to Shane. But if you're listening and wondering, how do I become a supporter? The best way that you can support, like I said, is subscribe to the show. All right. So this week, this week on Monday or last Monday, I guess, by the time you're listening to this and I'm recording it because it's Sunday now. Last week, I was invited to Liberty on the Rocks in Westminster. They had a little get together and they invited me to come out and speak at that get together. And I was the guest speaker. Look at me. I'm so important. And I talked about marketing and marketing our ideas and how marketing can help you be a better activist. And I'm going to kind of cover some of the stuff that I talked about in that talk. But I'm going to start with a story. So Facebook used to be incredibly frustrating for me. I used to have these multi-hour long arguments with people, 100 comment threads going back and forth with people, just getting completely frustrated because they couldn't see where I was coming from. I couldn't see where they were coming from. And I would get super high blood pressure over it. The doctor told me I couldn't do it. No. But I felt like I was wasting a lot of my time with a lot of people. And then you start reading stories about paid trolls, people who actually don't even believe the stuff that they're saying. They're just paid to argue with activists online. And you realize, okay, maybe I'm just wasting my time doing this. And the truth of the matter is, I don't do that anymore. I don't use Facebook in that way anymore. Sometimes I'll drop in and leave a comment. Sometimes if somebody comments back, I might respond to it. But most of the time, I don't use Facebook in that manner anymore. I don't have these hour-long debates with people over Facebook because I got to the end of too many of them, and neither one of us had budged. And both of us walked away feeling like we were right, the other guy was wrong. And it was just a waste of time. And now that I don't do it, but I still watch a lot of people do it, I realize that it's a terribly ineffective way to market an idea. And most people that go about it have horrible marketing skills when it comes to market their ideas. And it's just ineffective. And the problem is it doesn't matter how great your product is. It doesn't matter how great your message is. If you don't know how to sell it, the world's not going to know about it, or the world's not going to appreciate it, and it's not going to gain the traction it deserves. And so what I'm going to do in the remainder of this show is I'm going to teach you some lessons that I've learned from selling products and services that you can also take and translate into how you sell your message. So I'm going to be going over 8 advertising secrets, advertising strategies, or strategies, 8 kind of like core principles of advertising that if you implement them into how you market your message or your ideas, you're going to find much more effectiveness in converting people over to your way of seeing things, possibly. And I'll get more into why I say possibly a little bit later on in this segment of the show. So I'm going to be going over some do's and don'ts for selling your ideas. Number one, and this is probably the most important one, this is the foundational one, this is why I put it as number one. In marketing, we have this concept called join the prospect in the conversation that they're already having in their own mind. Another way that people say is start any piece of copy off with yes statements. Start off in agreement. If you can start a conversation with somebody agreeing with you, you're much more likely to end the conversation with somebody agreeing with you. But if you start the conversation off in offensive mode, you start the conversation off where both of you disagree with each other, the likelihood of you ending that conversation still disagreeing with each other is also that much more likely. So if your goal is to get people to see things the way that you see things, if your goal is to end a conversation in harmony, the best way to start the conversation is in harmony as well. And when it comes to marketing, like I said, we start with yes statements. We start with making statements that we know the person's going to be shaking their head. Yes, I can totally agree with that. I can totally relate to where you're coming from. A lot of times when I start an advertisement, I'll ask questions that I know that my prospect is going to answer yes to. So say I was selling, a weight loss supplement or an exercise program. I would start off the marketing with, are you tired of yo-yo up and down results from your diet? Are you tired of losing a bunch of weight only to gain it back because of whatever reason? Are you trying to get in shape for summer, but you don't want to have the same experience that you had last year, which just ended up with you being in the exact same spot again this year that you were at last year? I know that for whoever I'm trying to sell this particular exercise program to, they're probably going to answer yes to all of those questions. We're going to have common ground. We're going to have some sort of map overlay. So finding common values, saying, hey, is being healthy important to you? Is being around for when your children graduate college and start their own lives and being a grandparent, is that important to you? Is having a long, healthy life important to you? Is being sexy for this summer's swimsuit season important to you? Do we have these common values? And also common villains. Again, going back to like the diet and exercise market, finding a common villain that we can both throw rocks at. It's not your fault. The food industry is highly subsidized in this country. Corn growers are given huge amounts of tax dollars, and their work is subsidized, and therefore high fructose corn syrup and processed corn ends up in all of the food, and corn is just basically filler food. And you basically feed corn to your livestock just to get them fat. And so what is that doing to you? It's not your fault. It's these villains' fault that run the FDA and run the food industry. It's their fault, but there is something that you can do about it. So we start off with common values. We find some common villains and we start off in agreement. I'm joining the conversation that's already going on in their head. Same thing with activism. Everybody has at least one thing where they can agree with you. They might not agree with you about 9/11 being an inside job, but they might agree with you that fluoride in the water is not the healthiest thing. They might not agree with you that public education is destroying the minds of the children, but they might agree with you that the war on drugs is a complete and utter failure. So you find where you have overlap in your map. You find where you have common ground. You find where you agree with them, and you start the conversation there. So number one, join the conversation already going on in their mind. Number two, and this is important, especially in activism, avoid using $10 words. We all want to sound smart. We all want to sound intellectually inferior or superior. Don't do it. You end up sounding like a jerk. You end up sounding pretentious. And you end up losing people because they can't connect to you. They feel like you're talking down to them, and they feel like they're not on the same level as you, and you lose them. So whatever kind of common ground you found with them, as soon as you start using $10 words, you're going to lose it. Most movies are written for a seventh grade reading level, and that's like the adult movies. When I write ads, I put a rule on myself. I try not to write ads that are above a fourth grade reading level. If I can keep my ads between a third and a fifth grade reading level, I'm usually happy with them. If I get to the end of an ad and it's at sixth grade, I go back and I shorten stuff. I take out bigger words and I make it as easy to consume as possible. If you want people to consume your message, you need to make that message as easy for them to consume as possible. Even when I'm writing ads for business owners, I still try to make my ads at a fourth grade reading level. So when I'm trying to advocate my political beliefs, I still want to make it as simple and easy to consume for people as possible. So don't use $10 words. You're going to lose people. You're going to sound like a jerk, and you're working against yourself. I'm not saying it's a great thing that most people read at a fourth grade reading level, but it is what it is, and I'm not going to fight against it. I'm going to use it to better sell my message. Number three, what's in it for me? WIFM, everybody's favorite radio station. Whenever I'm trying to sell a product, I don't sell the product itself. I sell what benefits the person is going to get from that product. So when I'm trying to sell my message, my activism, I'm going to make it about their needs rather than my own. I'm not going to make it about, I need to sell this product so I can make money. I'm going to make it about, I need to sell this product so I can better your life. When I'm selling my activism, my ideas, it's the same thing. I'm not selling my ideas because I will have a better world to live in if you understand the values of freedom. I'm selling my ideas because you will have a better world to live in if you understand the ideas of freedom. Make it about them. Make it about their gains, what they stand to lose, what they stand to gain. Don't make it about, I'm sick of my tax dollars being spent this way. Make it about, I'm sick of people using your tax dollars to fund things that you're not happy about. Make it about them. Make it about what they can gain, what they stand to lose, and it makes it a lot easier for them to buy in to your idea. Number four, the rule of reciprocity. Basically, Stephen Covey in Seven Habits of Highly Effective People, he wrote about seek first to understand, then to be understood. In content marketing, we do a lot of creating blog posts, creating podcasts, creating free content for you to consume that will attract the type of people that we want to buy our actual content or our actual products. It's basically, and samples in the supermarket are based off of the same idea. Basically, give first. Before you ask somebody to give something back to you, make an investment with them. Before you try to make withdrawals from people, make investments first. There's a couple upsides to this. First upside is when you listen to other people in the middle of a discussion, when you're actually listening to them and they feel like you've heard them, then they're going to be more willing to listen to you in return. Once you've given them your attention, they're more likely to give you their attention. Also, when you listen and you actually understand where they're coming from, you can better personalize the message. And as a bonus of this, you can find flaws in your own product. If you listen to the marketplace and you listen to customer complaints, you can find the flaws in your product and you can make a better product. If you have flaws in your message or your idea or your activism, and you actually listen to people, then you can find those flaws and you can tighten up your message. You can make your activism more congruent, more correct. You can correct your flaws, and then you have a better idea that you're trying to sell to people. So the rule of reciprocity, before you expect to receive, make sure that you're giving first. Number five, and this one I see people make this mistake all the time, don't lead with logic. Logic only helps people once they've already decided to buy. We, as consumers of ideas and of products, we start with emotions. We make our decisions based off of our emotions, and then we back those decisions up with logic. That's why the front of the package is all the if it's a toy, it's the kid having fun playing with the toy. If it's a car, it's the person having security and safety for their family or having an exciting adventure out in the mountains. The emotional appeal is the first thing that you're hit with. And then you get all the statistics. When you flip the package around, the emotional appeal is on the front. On the back is all of the logical reasons to confirm that you made a good buying decision. So hit people with, and I know this sounds bad, you know, resorting to what about the children? But the fact is that's what people respond to. Don't hand somebody who's brand new to the eyes of to the ideas of liberty, don't hand them a copy of Human Action by Mises, because you're going to lose them. Once they're already going down that rabbit hole and they want to solidify what they've already made the emotional buying decision about freedom with, Once they're on their way down the rabbit hole, then hand them Human Action. But before that, if you put the logic before the emotional appeals, you're going to lose the sale. Don't ignore logic altogether, but understand that any sale requires a mix of logical appeals and emotional appeals, and you want to lead with emotional appeals and then back up the buying decision with logical appeals. Number six is to use stories rather than statistics. Statistics are boring. And I don't know if you've ever had this happen to you, but you posted a statistic in an argument on Facebook, and immediately somebody comes back with a counter statistic. And then you go find another statistic, and it's just a battle of statistics. When you try to sell somebody with statistics, you put them in defense mode. You put them in argument mode. You put them in, I've got to go find statistics to counter this statistic mode. Stories are way better ways to teach people. Stories are like the oldest way that we've ever been able to. Stories go back to before we even knew how to read and write. We had to use stories around the campfire to pass on lessons from one generation to the next. Stories are the oldest form of teaching. They're also the oldest form of learning. When you use a story, it does a couple of different things. Number one, it puts people's guard down. It makes people say, okay, I'm going to relax. When you're hitting somebody with an argument or statistics, their guard immediately goes up. When you hit somebody with a story, their guard immediately goes down. A lot of times when people are listening to stories, they kind of, they relax a little bit. They let the storyteller take the steering wheel and they let the storyteller lead them to their destination. And that's what, when it comes to persuading, when it comes to marketing products, services, or ideas, you want to lead people. You don't want to combat people and force them into the corner where they finally give up and buy your idea or your product. You want to lead them to that idea or product. So use stories rather than statistics. Next, number seven, know who to market your message to. If you're selling Advil, you don't want to sell it to people who have never had a headache. You want to sell it to people who have a migraine right now. They say low-hanging fruit. I think that's kind of a condescending term. But you want to make sure that you're selling to people who are open and receptive to what you're selling. If you're in a store and the store's burning down and you're running for the fire exit and you're trying to save as many people as you possibly can, if somebody's dead set against leaving the store until they've paid for whatever they've been shopping for, every second that you spend fighting with that person is a second that you can't spend saving the lives of people who would actually appreciate you trying to save them. So if you've got Advil to sell, don't spend all of your time fighting with people who have never had a headache. Spend your time selling it to people who are open to the idea that Advil can help cure the headache that they have right now. If you're selling an idea, don't try and sell it to people who have no interest in changing their own mindset. Sell it to people who are open-minded. Sell it to people who are open to thinking about your message. Sure, plant the seeds. Tell the person who's never had a headache before in their life, hey, well, you might have a headache in the future, and if you do, come holler at me. Plant those seeds, but spend most of your time, spend most of your energy on people who are more willing to accept the help, to accept the value that you have to offer. And number eight, the Socratic method. People don't like it when you just give them the answers. People like to come to the answers themselves. So ask questions that lead people to the answers that you want them to understand. You oftentimes know what it was that you were questioning that led you to understanding things in a different way. Ask those questions of other people. If something doesn't make sense and it will make them rethink a position, ask them a question rather than forcing that new position down their throat. And the reason why is because when an answer is hand-fed to you or force-fed to you, you don't take ownership over that answer. But when somebody asks you a question and you're forced to think about it, and through thinking about it, you come to your own conclusion and you come to your own realization and you come up with the answer yourself, you're so much more likely to take ownership over that answer. It becomes a part of who you are. It becomes a part of the way that you think. If somebody just tells you this is the answer, then in the back of your mind, every time that comes up, you're like, well, that's what he said or what she said or what the unicorn or the attack helicopter said is the answer. That's not what my answer is, though. But if you ask them questions, if you use the Socratic method, if you, through questions, lead them to coming up with the answers themselves, they'll own those answers. They'll become ingrained in how they think and how they see things. And then those answers become theirs and not just yours. So again, I'm going to go over these again real quick. Number one, remember to start with the conversation going on in their own mind. Start where you have overlay of your maps. Start where they're at, not where you're at. Remember to speak their language. Number two, don't talk above them. Don't use $10 words. Don't try to sound smart. Use common language when you're talking to people. Number three, personalize your message to their interests rather than to your interests. Make it about what they get rather than what you get. And you should really be interested in what they get as well. Number four, the rule of reciprocity. Before you try to make any kind of withdrawals from people, you need to first make deposits. Before you expect people to give you their attention, you need to give them your attention. Number five, don't start with logical appeals. Don't ignore logical appeals altogether, but start with emotional appeals and then back up your rationalization with logical appeals. Number six, utilize stories and analogies. People love stories. People learn best through stories. Number seven, don't waste your energy on the wrong audience. And number eight, ask questions and let people come up with the answers themselves. Until next time, Free Market Squad, be your own boss. Deuces.
Free minds, free markets, free people.
Are you a liberty-minded entrepreneur, small business owner, agorist, or freelancer? Do you ever struggle in your business and feel like you're all alone in the world? Can you imagine how great it would be if there were a community of freedom-loving business people just waiting to connect with you? Can you keep a secret? There is such a community. Free Market Squad is the online mastermind group for people who are passionate about freedom and success in life. Access to a mastermind group is probably one of the most valuable things you could have in your life, and membership in the Free Market Squad is absolutely free. If you have a Facebook account and you want more information on how to join the Free Market Squad, head on over to www.freemarketsquad.com. That's freemarketsquad.com.